I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Lacey Starling. Lacey is the president of Legion Logistics. And Lacey, you've had your company now 3.5 years. You are growing like crazy right through the recession. And you're growing again. Recently, there was some announcements that you're going to be adding several new employees. You're in a hiring blitz. What is causing this great uptick in your company? And maybe before we even talk about that, let's just talk about what Legion Logistics does.
Legion Logistics is what's called a third-party logistics provider, and that's sort of a very long name for a truck brokerage. So when companies need to move freight around the country, they call us and we find truck drivers to move their freight for them. So we really are the middleman connecting those two halves of the equation. And our growth has really been because of aggressive searching for new customers. We've added some great salespeople to our team who've really been pushing to find new customers and to fill that need. When the economy took its downturn, a lot of small truck driving companies went out of business, and it created a little bit of a vacuum in the marketplace. So with fewer trucks on the road, fewer drivers, then the need for a brokerage really starts to increase.
Did you, in your wildest imagination, ever think that you'd be running a company that has to do with trucking? I mean, you grew up the daughter of a truck driver. How ironic is that?
It is wild. My dad worked very hard to support us as a family. He was a truck driver, and we lived on a farm, and he did construction work, too. And I always joke that our business isn't glamorous, but it's a $187 billion industry in the United States. And so there's a lot of pie that you can divide up for that. So I'll trade glamour for money any day of the week.
Do you do just like whole truckloads? Do you do partial truckloads? I mean, what type of customers are you looking for?
When we first started, we focused mostly on those less than truckload, LTL shipments. So that's when you have a single pallet, up to 5 pallets that you need moved. That was really my area of specialization. And then Tony Koutsoff-Titas, the other owner of the company, came on board, and he really focuses on full truckload freight. When you have a whole load, 26 pallets, a piece of equipment, something like that that needs to be moved. We can also do rail loads. We contract with all the rail lines in the United States. We do a little bit of air, but it's more complicated post 9/11. And we can broker some sea freight too.
It's really important for you, isn't it, to create a work environment that is very relaxed, really focused on the employees. And the other thing that I noticed when I was looking at your information, you've recently adopted a class in Northern Kentucky, which is near and dear to my heart. We have adopted a class too. Let's talk about why you've taken that kind of leadership attitude with regard to your business.
I worked at a lot of places when I was still working for other folks that I hated. I hated to get up in the morning. I'd hit the snooze button 6 times. You drag yourself in. You have a stomach ache, a headache. And I thought, okay, if I'm going to start a company, I'm going to make it a place where people are happy to come into work most of the time. I can't promise it all the time, but most of the time. And when I talked to my employees about what's important to them, one of the things that was really important was connecting with the community. I think a lot of people have talked about this, millennials, you know, the Gen Y, they really want to feel connected. So we said, okay, what do you want to do? I put it out to my staff and I said, how do you want to participate in the community? And one of our employees had come from Huntington Bank and they had adopted a class in the past. So this past month, we adopted a 5th grade class at Carlisle Elementary School in Covington. And we're having a really great time pen palling with them. We're going to be taking them to the museum in the spring, God help us. And it should be really great.
Oh, that's
we're very
wonderful.
Excited.
I'm really thrilled about that for you. And if people would like information about Legion Logistics, you are hiring. Yes. What is the contact information?
Well, you can call us at 859-384-1726, or you can visit us online at www.legion-logistics.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Lacey Starling. Lacey is the president of Legion Logistics. And Lacey, you've been in business now about 3.5 years. What was it like to start a business when we were still in the recession? How challenging was that?
It was pretty scary. We had saved a lot of money. They always say when you start a business, save, you know, 2 times what you need to survive for a year. I would say make it 3 because you just never know what's going to happen. We certainly faced some obstacles right at the beginning, and I ended up being pregnant with my daughter at the same time we were starting the business, which anyone who's been pregnant knows how exhausting that whole process is. And I always joke, and it's true, but the day that I went to the hospital to give birth to Catherine, we had $63 in our checking account. And so I gave birth on a Friday. I was back at my desk on Monday. I've talked to a lot of college students who are interested in entrepreneurship. They take classes in it, and they always say, well, I want to be my own boss. And I always ask them, do you know what that means? to have to work all those hours and to define that for yourself.
Yeah, what it really means is your bosses are the customers.
Yes.
And you got a lot of bosses, right?
Absolutely. And you don't have any tougher boss than your customers. Every time they call, you have to pick up the phone. You know, you have to be available, but it's exhilarating.
And fast forward 3.5 years and look where you've come from, $63 in your checking account, right? You're
yes.
on a growth trend that's pretty remarkable. What do you attribute that to? And how do you differentiate yourself from other companies in the logistics business?
I think the key to our success in attracting good employees, because that's the key to anybody's success, no matter what they tell you, without the right employees, you'll never succeed. And it's the hardest thing about owning your own business is hiring people. And our success comes from being very open in our culture, being very honest with our employees, and being who we are. I can't hide who I am. And Tony, my business partner, he can't hide who he is. We just are. And it comes through to our customers, too. We're very authentic in how we do business, in our ethics, in our customer service, and our availability. And also the fact that, you know, we're a service-disabled, veteran-owned company. And it's a lot of hyphens that means that Tony, my business partner, was in the U.S. Army and he was disabled during his time of service. And so we put that out there and our support for veterans. We have 7 veterans on staff, so 7 out of 24, 23 staff members is a really good ratio. And it's just part of what makes us different in the community and in the logistics community in particular, is that there's a human being on the other end of the phone, not just a big corporation.
Well, you guys really, you walk the talk too. I mean, you're very engaged in the community, aren't you?
Yes. We, one of our corporate missions is to do a community service event every quarter, not just to give money, but to give of our time. And all of my employees who participate in those get floating holidays in exchange for their time, because I believe I have to put my money where my mouth is and provide them with that. So if they give up a Saturday to help with a community service event, we give them a floating holiday. When we run our United Way campaign, whatever they donate, I match 100%. When we move a load, we donate $1 to the Wounded Warrior Project. We're doing wellness initiatives. So in April, for every flight of stairs they climb in the building, instead of using the elevator, I'll give $1 to Wounded Warrior. So just to create that excitement, but also that giving back. We're very lucky to be in the position we're in, and we need to give back to the community.
You've even outgrown your space, haven't you?
Yes, twice now. We are 1 year anniversary of being in our office space instead of my basement. A year ago today, we were in the basement of the house, which was it was a little cramped, and we moved into 2,500 square feet of office space. We outgrew that in 4 months. This year, we're probably going to add another 4,500 square feet of office space. So we're just, I always say we're on a rocket ship. I want to continue that growth so that our company can invest even more in the community.
If people would like information about Legion Logistics, what is your contact information?
Sure. You can give us a call at 859-384-1726 or visit us online at www.legion-logistics.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Crystal, we recently had a question on our tax chat about a Roth IRA, and the question was the listener had converted part of their IRA a couple of years ago when you could pay the tax on the conversion over a 2-year period, and they wondered if they were still able to do that. And the short answer is no, you can't do the 2-year spread, but you can still convert a Roth.
Yes, you can convert to a Roth from a traditional IRA. The key is that it just needs to make sense. It's just not something that everyone should do blindly. You have to really take a look at your situation, your age, when you might need the money, what your tax bracket is, how you'll get the cash to pay the tax, because there usually is some tax on the conversion.
The idea is that you pay the tax today on the value of your IRA when you convert it to the Roth. And then when you take it out, and hopefully many years later, you don't pay any tax again on that or the income it's earned. But it is one thing you said, it's nothing that you should do blindly. And of course, you shouldn't do it blindly. But if you did, you can undo it. That's one of the few things in the tax world that you can undo.
You can, as long as you do it by a certain deadline.
Right, by the time you file your tax return. So if you did a Roth conversion at the end of 2012 and for whatever reason determined that no longer made sense, then you can undo it and go back to the IRA without any penalty or tax consequence.
Again, as long as you do it prior to the time you file your 2012 return, including extensions.
That's right. And really, IRAs are a great thing for most people, whether it's a Roth IRA, and the benefit of the Roth IRA is you don't get a deduction when it goes in, but you don't pay tax on it when it comes out. There's a traditional IRA, which only certain people can get, but in a traditional IRA, you get a deduction when you put the money in, and you can get a deduction for that if you're not covered by another plan or if your income is below a certain amount.
And you can still make that contribution and get a deduction if you're eligible, as long as you do it prior to April 15th of this year. So certainly, if you can take advantage of that, that's one of those deductions that you can still do. It makes a lot of sense, and you want to take advantage of it if you can.
Well, it's always good if you can put money in an account that's in your name, and the government will pay you, in essence, a tax amount in order to do that. And really, hopefully, you've already done your 2012 IRA and have funded your 2013, which you could have funded starting January 1. And actually, you can put another $500 in 2013. So the limits are $5,500 for everyone and an additional $1,000 if you're age 50 or over.
Yes, and certainly the big reason to fund your IRAs early is because the money can start to accrue interest earlier. So effectively, you'll have more money at the time that you need to pull the dollars out for retirement. And back to your point, Tom, I love the idea that the IRS has given us a tax deduction to help fund dollars for our retirement. It's just a great deal.
Well, and IRAs are great, but they can complicate your life. And not only are there questions about how much money to put in and how to do it, but people who are at the other end of the spectrum, when they reach retirement age, have to think carefully about how they take their money out of the IRAs. And if you do have both a Roth and a traditional IRA, with the Roth being non-taxable when the distributions come out, it gives you more flexibility in terms of the distributions that you need during retirement.
And not to complicate things, but I will mention this. If you are not eligible for a Roth and you can't get a deduction for a traditional IRA, you can still make a contribution to a traditional IRA. You just can't take the deduction. It can be complicated, but in the end, it's worth it. It just makes sense to take a look at your own situation and see which type of IRA is best for you. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Crystal, one of the things that many people overlook when they do their tax returns, and really this is both individuals and businesses, is some of the credits that are available. And credits are much better than deductions because credits offset your tax dollar for dollar if you're eligible for them.
Some of the best credits are the ones that we get because we have to spend the money anyway. For example, child care credit.
Right. You can get a credit for up to $6,000 of expenditures for child care. You get a percentage of that depending on your income as a credit against your income tax. And it's, like you said, something you're doing anyway. Just make sure you take advantage of that. You do have to list out the individual or the institution that you paid the money to on your tax return, but it's a worthwhile credit to take.
It sure is. And if you have a child that goes to college and they're still in their first 4 years, and if you yourself are going to college in the first 4 years post high school, then you may be able to take a credit as well, and that is a refundable portion of the American Opportunity Credit. That can get a little complicated. A portion of the credit is non-refundable, but a lot of people miss the fact that some of that American Opportunity Credit is refundable, so make sure you take a look at that if you are paying college tuition.
Yeah, and it's confusing to people, too, because you get a form from the college called a 1099-T that spells out the tuition and fees you paid that are eligible for the credit. It also has, if you were happened to be lucky enough to get a scholarship, it has that amount. Some people get confused and think they have to take that scholarship into income. I get that question a lot on our tax chats. But no, they're just reporting that to you because the gross amount of the tuition is reduced by the amount that was funded by the scholarship for purposes of calculating the credit.
Another thing people get confused about when it comes to tuition is when they use a student loan, a college loan, effectively, to pay for the tuition. They think they can't claim a credit for the money paid by the loan. But in fact, you can. You can actually still take advantage of credits and deductions, for that matter, if it's more beneficial, tuition deduction, even if you're funding your college tuition through a loan. So it's just very important to make sure you know the facts, because those are very beneficial tax benefits.
That's right. And in fact, if you do have loans, depending on your level of income, you can deduct the interest you pay on the loans when you start paying interest as well. You know, businesses sometimes overlook credits. I think we've found in lots of cases that businesses overlook the research and development credit. I think there's a thinking out there that they have to have a laboratory in order to take the R&D credit, and that's really not the case.
That's one of my favorite credits because it's so lucrative and so many companies can qualify for it. Used to be that you could only take that credit if you were doing some kind of experimental in terms of what you might think in a laboratory. That credit was changed a few years ago, so that it's much more encompassing, and it includes types of processes that would even involve improving a manufacturing process, not necessarily even coming up with a specific product or a software, but actually improving processes can qualify for the R&D credit.
And lots of businesses do that, not just manufacturing companies. So you don't have to be a manufacturing company to be entitled to that credit, but almost all manufacturing companies probably do some amount of R&D that should be eligible for the credit.
Even processes that would be incurred to eliminate uncertainty. So, for example, if you're in the process of developing or improving a process or a product, just seeing, does this work better? Does that work better? People's salaries, even subcontracted labor that would be involved in coming to that conclusion may be eligible to qualify. So again, if you're not taking advantage of the R&D credit, it's worth a look because it can save you a lot of tax. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Mike Reeder, founder and owner of Mike's Music. Mike, maybe you can tell us a little bit about what Mike's Music does, what you sell.
We sell vintage and used guitars, amps, pedals, music equipment in general, drums, PAs, keyboards, mostly obscure, hard-to-find things. We do sell some new things as well.
What motivated you to get into that business?
You know, I've played in bands all my life. I started playing in high school, searching out my own equipment, trying to find things I wanted, trading, just kind of being obsessed with that kind of thing.
Did you have your own collection to start with
yeah.
and then open up a store?
Yeah, I started. The original store is called Mike's Music and Flea, and it was like my basement, basically. It was, you know, everything you can imagine, like a flea market and my original 6, 7, 8 guitars.
How old would you say one of your guitars are that you have in your stores?
We have, you know, old acoustic guitars from the mid-1800s.
Oh, wow.
You know, parlor guitars and things like that, and they range up till, you know, last week.
Where do you find these instruments?
Well, we place ads. We've done all kinds of things, but my business is kind of a small world, so it's a lot of the same collectors. Honestly, I've sold a lot of the same guitars 3 and 4 times. It's hard to find these things, so you kind of have to be in touch with the people that are into those particular things.
It's got to be really cool to have a business that you are so passionate about. I mean, this has to be really fun for you.
Oh, yeah, it's a blast. It's every day is different. You never know what's going to happen. You never know when you sell one if you'll ever see it again. One's going to walk in the door the next day. I mean, it's a love-hate experience even when you sell one, you know.
Do you ever get a guitar that you don't want to sell because you want to keep it?
Every day. All the time. Yeah, that's the sad part of it. I have, like, collector friends that always come in and say, you know, my wife's complaining, I'm getting too much. I said, when you're really sick, you make it a business. You know, you have to legitimize it then.
But you also, like you said, are in a band.
Yeah, I've been playing in bands my whole life, and right now I play in, like, three bands locally.
And what type of venues do you play at?
Well, different bands play at different locations, but we play at, like, Southgate House, Revival, the new place, Florence at Wilcats, and, you know, a lot of local bars around this area, Main Strauss.
Do you use your own guitars?
Yeah, I have a collection of my own stuff that I use, and occasionally I'll take one out of the store and try it and decide if I want to keep it or something, but mostly it's things that I've collected myself.
Well, are these guitars, can they be a good investment for people?
In the last couple of years, there's been some things that have came down a little bit. For the most part, since I've been doing it, almost everything has increased in value. And, you know, very few things have actually came down.
Well, what is one of the most unique instruments that you've found? And why is it so special?
Well, there's certain items that I specialize in. Custom colored Fender guitars from the 50s and 60s. Les Pauls from 52 to 62, especially 59 through 60. Those guitars are things I love and I've always been into, and I found quite a few of them over the years.
How many do you have?
In the two stores?
Mm-hmm.
There's probably about couple thousand guitars.
If people would like to find out more about your stores, visit your stores, where can they find the contact information?
You can find us on Facebook. We have a Facebook page. We also have a website, which is mikesmusicohio.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Mike Reeder. Mike is the founder and owner of Mike's Music. And Mike, you've turned your love and your hobby into a business, which is selling vintage guitars and other musical instruments from the business side of that business. How difficult is it to run a retail operation like that?
Well, I mean, there's been a lot of changes in the business over the years, so you have to really be up on what's popular, you know, where the trends are going. You know, there's generations of collectors now in this business. I mean, the vintage guitar business has probably only been around since the 70s, but a lot of the early guys that were buying certain things have moved on or done with it. So, yeah, I mean, you have to constantly be in touch with the popular items.
What's your personal favorite guitar?
I have kind of spells, but you know, I love Telecasters, and I also love Les Pauls as far as guitars go.
And I know you play in multiple bands, don't you? Currently three?
Yes, yeah.
What other instruments besides guitar do you play?
Well, I play, you know, bass, guitar, and drums, and a little bit of keyboards, not too much. And I've played saxophone some, but I'm not very good at it.
So you've followed your passion, you've made it a business. What would you say to people listening today who really don't know how to do that? They don't know how to get started. What advice might you have for them?
Oh, I would just say go for it. I mean, nobody's going to believe in you more than yourself. And, you know, you'll have fun even if you fail.
That's looking on the bright side of things, yeah. Isn't it?
Well, there's never a perfect time, is there?
No, you just have never to go a perfect time.
What about some of the challenges as a business owner? Has the economy impacted you much?
Yeah, I mean, with anything collectible that you don't have to survive, the last few years have probably been some of the hardest times for us. But because what I do is so hard to find and rare, and there's people that are kind of obsessed with it, it's a strange business. If you find something good and it hasn't kind of been circulated a lot, people always want it.
Have you met any famous musicians? Do you have any of them coming into your stores looking for guitars?
Yeah, because my Cincinnati store is next to Bogart's, I've met a lot of people. A lot of people come by the stores over the years. I mean, anybody you could imagine, from Fleetwood Mac to the Eagles.
Oh, wow. When the Eagles come back in, will you come call me and let me come over there?
Yeah, sure.
You're also the vintage instrument appraiser for the Kentucky Collectibles TV show on KET. What's involved with that, and how do you know about setting those prices?
Well, last year was the first year they did that, and when I attended it, I didn't know what to expect. It was great. It was like a two-day thing where people brought instruments in, and they go around to the appraisers. I've done that a few times for different magazines and stuff, So I was used to that. And there wasn't that many instruments. There was only about 20 or so.
So you're really the go-to expert locally. If people would like to come to the store, learn more about guitars, do you help them with that information as well?
Sure, yeah. I mean, most people have questions about, you know, what makes a certain guitar expensive, what's the difference in one guitar year to year and things like that. We're happy to do that kind of thing, sure.
Do you sell new guitars as well?
We occasionally sell new guitars. Around Christmas time, we sell some more inexpensive new guitars. And we're also dealers for Thai guitars, which is kind of like a high-end art guitar.
And if folks listening would like to come check out some of the guitars, learn more about Mike's Music, what is your contact information?
We have a Facebook page, and we also have mikesmusicohio.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Marissa Abernathy. Marissa is the communications director for the Habitat of Humanity of Greater Cincinnati. It's an incredible organization, the Habitat for Humanity, and you really change the lives for so many people. Let's talk about what the mission is.
Habitat for Humanity is obviously a nonprofit organization, and our mission is to eliminate substandard housing by building, renovating, and repairing homes throughout the tri-state region in partnership with low-income families in need. Our partner families are really what you would consider the hardworking poor. They have jobs, they're earning somewhere between 30 and 60% of the area median income, and we partner with them to create home ownership opportunities. One of the biggest misconceptions about Habitat for Humanity is that it's a giveaway program, right?
So it's not something that someone can just get a home for free.
Right. I was saying earlier before we got on, this is not extreme home makeover. You know, you're actually investing your own sweat and labor, working alongside volunteers volunteers to help build your home. And then at the end of that process, Habitat actually writes a 0% interest, no profit loan. And those families are paying a mortgage just like you or I are. The break is that it is made affordable for them. Usually a partner family is paying somewhere between $400 and $450 a month in mortgage.
How do you select the families to get the housing?
There's no shortage of need, obviously. We serve 9 counties in Ohio, Indiana, and Kentucky. We build both urban and rural, new construction, and do rehabs. And our families really do find us. We have over 1,000 inquiries each year from families that are interested in owning a Habitat home. But ultimately, they are selected based on 3 criteria. Their need, we actually go out and assess their current living situation. Secondly, their ability to pay, because we need for them to be able to afford that $400 a month mortgage, because we then recycle those funds to help build future homes. And then lastly, their willingness to partner. 500 hours is no small feat. 6 months of Saturdays, you know, going out and finding babysitters, you know, building a house, probably most of our partner families have never even considered doing. So we want to make sure that you're willing to take on that burden to earn it.
How many families do you help each year, and then how many do you have in the region that you've helped over the last several years?
Right. Well, Habitat for Humanity of Greater Cincinnati has collectively built or rehabbed over 450 homes. We've been around in this area for about 26 years, and this year we are looking to take on over 50 projects, and all we need is more money and more volunteers in order to accomplish that.
Marissa, one of the ways that you fund your program is through your ReStore, and I believe you have 4 ReStores here in our region?
That's right, we do. The ReStore is sort of Habitat's social enterprise arm. It's kind of like the Goodwill of Home Depot. We've got 4 locations in Bond Hill, in Cheviot, in Hamilton, and in Florence, and it's open to the public. You can shop there or donate materials like windows, lighting, doors, furniture, appliances. And, you know, donors get a tax deduction. Shoppers
sure
get to save.
It's a win-win.
Yep, it is. It's a win-win and a win-win-win because you're actually keeping materials out of our local area waste stream and giving materials a second life. So we just encourage people to call 721-GIVE. We can do a free pickup for you. And it's a great way to save some money and support Habitat at the same time.
And what's your website?
It is HabitatCincinnati.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Today, our guest is Marissa Abernathy. Marissa is the communications manager for Habitat for Humanity of Greater Cincinnati. And Marissa, I think a lot of people are familiar to some degree with Habitat for Humanity. We know that you provide housing for low-income people that couldn't otherwise afford the housing. But you're also a good avenue for lots of volunteer activities in helping to provide that housing. How do people get involved if they want to volunteer with Habitat for Humanity?
Yeah, great question. Habitat is certainly a volunteer-centric and volunteer-driven organization. We could not accomplish our work without literally hundreds of volunteers each year that help us build our homes and actually help to train other volunteers like maybe me or you that don't know exactly what we're doing out on a construction site. Volunteering with Habitat is actually very easy. We are working on over 50 projects during the 2013 build season, so there's no shortage of need, whether you're interested in possibly getting trained as a volunteer. We have a Cornerstone Trading Program that you can sign up for on our website at HabitatCincinnati.org, or you can just sign up and find a project that's close to you at home. We build in a 9-county region, so we're in Ohio, Indiana, and Kentucky. So if you're interested in working on a rehab, we've got a project for you. If you're interested in building new, we've got a project for you.
And you don't necessarily have to have a set of skills to volunteer?
Absolutely not. It is open to anybody at all that is interested in giving back to their community and really making an investment. When you are working with Habitat as a volunteer, it's not just like you're giving it and tomorrow it doesn't mean anything. These families are going to own these homes for years. They are paying for them. We're creating new homeownership opportunities, improving property values, and how cool is it for
sure.
You 10 years from now to be able to drive by something and say, I helped build that.
Well, and it's such a great team effort. Do families come as well and actually get involved as a family?
Yeah, they do. We have a lot of faith-based support, so lots of churches are involved, and that's a way for people to sort of come together and sort of have fellowship. We have a lot of businesses that actually support Habitat, which we're very, very thankful for, and use the Habitat job site as an atmosphere for morale building, for team building. Sort of, you know, take off your suits, take off your titles, and all of you are sort of out there on the same page working collectively to do something for another person. It can be pretty impactful.
Well, and the person that you're helping is maybe on the job site too, actually helping build their house.
Yes. Our partner families invest up to 500 hours of sweat equity building those homes alongside other volunteers. And so, you know, it can become a very personal experience. I love dedication ceremonies where all the volunteers sort of gather at the end of the process. The house is built. The family is crying. The volunteers are crying because it's you are really making a true change in someone's life, you know, for the future.
You know, Marissa, being tax time and all, a lot of people do have taxes on the mind. And this is also a way that people can get a tax deduction for something they're not going to use anymore, help somebody, and that's through your Restore.
Absolutely. The Restore is Habitat's sort of social enterprise. It's kind of like the Goodwill of Home Depot, if you will. We sell new and used donated building supplies and appliances, and the way that we stock our store is through donations from the general public and from maybe businesses that have manufacturer overruns or scratch and dent items. You can get a tax deduction for donating that item to us. Someone else can save by going to the Restore and buying it, and Habitat is able to help divert waste from our local area waste stream and to help fund future Habitat homes.
And if folks listening would like to learn more about the Restore, about Habitat of Humanity for Greater Cincinnati, what is your contact information?
You can call the Restore at 513-721-GIVE. We've got four locations in Bond Hills, Cheviot, Hamilton, and Florence. You can drop off your items or call us, and we will pick them up from you for free. You can find out more about the Restore, about volunteering, about special events, ways that you can support Habitat at habitatcincinnati.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Denise Ferguson. Denise is the Senior Vice President for Economic Development for the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber, and Denise has been our guest a few times. So, Denise, give us an update. What's going on in our community in terms of economic development?
There are a lot of things going on in economic development. Recently, Site Selection Magazine just released some rankings for the country, and the state of Ohio was second. And the Cincinnati region came out as eighth in the top metropolitan areas around the country for the 11th consecutive year.
What's the reason for that?
We get so high. It's a accumulation of project results. So we turn in all of the projects that we've had for company creation, company growth, and job creation in the region. And over that 11-year period, we have submitted 2,250 projects, creating more than 98,000 jobs and $19 billion in new investment over that time period.
That is an amazing statistic.
Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful. How does the partnership work to attract companies in this type of investment, Denise, to create that magnitude of jobs in our region?
Sure. We spend a lot of our time on business attraction and bringing companies into this region. And we are sort of in the middle of the process and work with all of our great local partners in the cities and counties and so on who have the relationships with the site owners and incentives locally. We also work with the states of Kentucky, with Northern Kentucky Triad, and with Jobs Ohio and the state of Ohio to bring those companies in and assist them in whatever way they need, whether it's incentives, connections, talent, whatever the case may be.
Do you actually go out and recruit some of these companies as opposed to them coming to you?
We do. It happens in both directions, but we have some very strong proactive efforts, and we're really queuing up a lot of wonderful proactive efforts this year. As we've talked about in the past, we have a new strategy focused on our industry clusters, and we have mapped many of those to different territories around the world. So as a matter of fact, on Monday, Trevor Hamilton from our office is leaving for India. We're about 3 years into a program with India and have developed some great partnerships and attracted some companies. We have a program I think we've spoken about before that we've kicked off last year with Israel that's very focused on innovation and bringing some of their great startups here for their U.S. location into Cincinnati, as well as nationally. Plenty of efforts there
as well.
Have
you seen much success with some of those cluster initiatives?
Yes, we absolutely have. One thing that's very interesting, especially internationally, is that we don't have a strong reputation here in Cincinnati. A lot of people globally don't know how great it is here and how all these companies are thriving. So when we go visit and sell the story, we've been very successful in attracting attention here.
You mentioned talent earlier. You need the great companies to attract talent, but great companies want to come where talent exists in a certain region. How do you go about assisting with the whole talent initiative?
We are doing a lot of things at the Chamber in the area of talent and partnering with many organizations like Partners for a Competitive Workforce and the Workforce Development Agencies. You know, it really used to be, and this is a somewhat debated position, it really used to be that talent followed companies. People went where there were jobs. It's pretty much switched, in my opinion. Companies are looking for where the talent is, and if it's not there, the company doesn't come. So we do a lot to very deeply analyze, and we're working actually with NKU to deeply analyze where we have gaps as we look out to 2020. So where do we have industries that are growing, and what type of talent do we need, and is it there?
And you say you're working with NKU. Are you saying you're looking at them in terms of helping develop career paths for those jobs that are anticipated by 2020?
We are absolutely doing that. What I'm specifically referring to is they're helping us analyze all of the federal and local data to understand. So as an example, if we need 4,000 more engineers in 2020, do we have the talent coming through our universities? And if we don't, developing plans for how we go and either attract that or work with the universities to ensure that we develop it.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Denise Ferguson. Denise is the Senior Vice President of Economic Development for the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber of Commerce. And Denise, what are some of the success stories that you've had recently in terms of bringing businesses to greater Cincinnati?
One great attraction success story that we had very recently was Huhtamäki. It's a Finnish company, and they were established in 1920. They have a North American headquarters in Kansas City, but are opening what they refer to as, you know, their new center of excellence out in Batavia. So they are going into the old Ford plant, which is a great story because they're refurbishing it, but bringing initially over 200 jobs into Claremont County, which is fantastic. They are the makers of Chinette and will be manufacturing cups for Starbucks and different things out in that facility.
What made them decide to choose Cincinnati and Claremont County?
There were a number of different factors in their decision. The site was significant. They had some very specific site requirements. It's obviously a very large facility, and they needed the ability to make it state-of-the-art in that manufacturing space. The people that were working with them on the projects, we had incredible support from Claremont County and from the community to help this project go forward through Jobs Ohio, but a number of different factors there.
We've really attracted a lot of international businesses, it seems, in recent years to this area.
Yes, we have always had a very strong focus on international opportunities. At any given time, the projects that we have the opportunity to compete for, we call our pipeline. And we've been looking at it recently, and at any given time, the opportunities that we're competing for, 35% are actually international projects. And when you have a community like ours that there is not great awareness globally, but we're becoming more and more globally competitive, bringing a community forward like Cincinnati that's so fantastic in so many ways and about which they're unaware, it's a nice selling opportunity.
So, Denise, prior to accepting this job here at the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber, you came from Michigan.
Correct.
How do you stack Cincinnati and Ohio with Michigan?
You know, it's very interesting. Michigan's got a lot of different communities going on, and I would actually make it a little broader than Michigan and talk about the Midwest. And I think in many ways, with some of the resurgence of the downtown, all of the five arts disciplines, you know, I think we have possibly the most cosmopolitan city in the general Midwest. And we certainly don't get a lot of credit for it. So in my opinion, it's time for us to really begin to promote that in a bigger way and show people who Cincinnati is and that it isn't just another typical Midwestern town.
How big a plus is it that downtown Cincinnati is becoming more vibrant as you're introducing this area to newer companies?
It's hugely important. Everybody talks a lot about young talent and young professionals. And, you know, I think the attraction components are the same, whether it's young professionals or empty nesters. But that vibrancy and that energy in your core downtown, you know, is paramount.
How do we know that Cincinnati is a great place for students to go to college and then stay and take jobs?
what efforts is being made there?
Right. That is something that we're developing a comprehensive strategy right now, targeted at a couple of different target audiences. One are those young professionals and some of those college grads so that they know that. The other is corporate executives. So we sort of hit at both ends of the spectrum there. And maximizing all channels. We do an excellent job with our regional tourism network and with the Convention and Visitors Bureau. What we're establishing is a messaging strategy that targets people to place their companies here and live here. That will involve traditional media. We are focusing on really leveraging earned media. In my opinion, we don't do enough with that with our successes, so I'd like to see us do that a lot more nationally and globally. We'll do that through our efforts as we travel globally and also social media.
And if people would like more information on the partnership or the chamber, Denise, what's the contact information?
The best thing to do is just visit the website of the Cincinnati USA Chamber of Commerce or the Cincinnati USA Partnership.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.